perfect through your loving hands. Well, check it out. Do you know you have a tool belt? You have a spiritual tool belt. We all have tools, spiritual tools. No matter what religion or faith tradition you're from, you have something that you have used in the past or maybe you use now. A simple one to remember is saying a blessing or grace before every meal, right? Remember that one in case you don't do it? It's a great way to reconnect. So actually, we've already used about four tools that I'm going to talk about before I even start my talk. You have used spiritual mind treatment. You've used affirmation. We've done meditation. And what else? Song, sacred song. So I've used a lot of my tool belts already, and so have you. So they're not that obscure, believe me. So as we know, a carpenter or a construction worker would never go on the job without their tools. No, they just wouldn't think of it. And they also wouldn't go without their tools close at hand, right next to them, around their waist especially, or in their toolbox. So if they go up on the roof or something and they don't think, oh yeah, I got to go get my hammer and climb down the ladder. No, they have their tools with them at all times. So we have our tools with us, if we remember, at all times when we're connected to that divine tool master known as God, Source, Spirit, Infinite Creator, Higher Power, whatever name you want to use. Did you hear about the blind carpenter? He picked up a hammer and saw. That was one of Rex's jokes. So there was a fellow who joined a gym. He was really excited. He wanted to get in shape and lose some weight. And so he joined this gym, and about 6 months later, he realized nothing was really changing. His body was the same. He still felt sluggish, and he didn't have any tone in his muscles, and he just didn't feel like he was getting his money's worth, let's say. So he went back to the gym and he asked to see the manager, and the manager came out and he said, you know, I'm just not very satisfied with my results. Nothing has changed. I haven't lost weight. I don't feel any better. And the manager, gym manager, said to him, well, how often did you come work out? And the fellow said, well, I never came in. I just bought the membership. How many of us have taken the classes, read the books, bought the ticket, and didn't do the work? And then we say, oh, it doesn't work. Well, that's part of practicing what we learn. And that's what I love about every Sunday, Reverend Maggie or some speaker here or anywhere has a really good message for us to take some information and to apply it to practical spirituality. That's what we say in our vision statement. So it takes a certain discipline, doesn't it, to use your tools. And how many of you don't like the word discipline? Well, usually discipline implies punishment or sacrifice. You're going to get disciplined, right? There are, however, other uses for the word discipline. It also means to train oneself in a controlled way or an activity or an experience that provides a mental or physical training. Like an athlete is disciplined. Dancers. I was a professional dancer most of my life. I grew up with discipline in studying my art form. So there's many forms of discipline. And then think about when we do affirmations, spiritual mind treatment, aren't we engaging in activities that are designed to train ourselves to perceive and look at life from a higher place, a spiritual viewpoint? And used as a noun, a discipline is a branch of knowledge, typically one you study in higher education. So you might say, you know, someone might ask you, what was your discipline in college? And biology, let's say. So you get a degree. So when you focus on a specific discipline, you dive deeply into it, and you eventually gain mastery over it. And as we learn the principles and engage in the practices of science of mind, we're studying the principle of metaphysics, specifically focusing on new thought, mysticism, mental science, and spiritual healing. And the root word of discipline is disciple, someone who follows a teacher or a leader or a philosophy, just like Jesus had disciples, right? Well, we don't follow Ernest Holmes per se like that, but we might say that we're followers of a philosophy, or as Holmes would say, we are practitioners of the science of mind. Now, anyone, he said, who follows the principles and engages the practices of science of mind is a practitioner, lower P, lowercase p, and then there are those of us who have trained and studied, and we are licensed to be spiritual counselors for others to use these principles and practices, and we are professional licensed practitioners with a big capital P. But all of us who study this foundation are indeed practitioners of the philosophy, faith, and way of life that we call science of mind here. So a raise of hands, how many of you grew up in a traditional religion or philosophy? Okay. And so often we hear when people come to a center such as this that they feel like they've come home. And simply it's because it resonates with their heart, I think. And we teach universal truths and principles. We're not we don't teach a dogma per se. And many of us who love this philosophy of the science of mind only practice haphazardly. We may engage in practicing the presence for a period of time while we're taking a class or reading a book, but if you noticed how easy it is to drift away from it? And I think if it's like a dance, it's a dance of remembering and forgetting. Remembering, I have God as my source and supply for all my good. Forgetting, I have a lot of debt and I'm miserable. Remembering, there's a power for good in the universe and I can use it. Forgetting, nobody helps me. Does anyone else do that dance? So in our busy lives, we tend to revert back to our old patterns and ways of thinking. And why do we do this, do you think? Because it's habit. It's just habit. And in 1906, Thomas Troward, who was one of Ernest Holmes' teachers, called our habits grooves of thought. And in 1938, Holmes called it our thought atmosphere based on the tendency of our thinking. And today's neuroscience describes it as synapses that wire together, fire together. And we know, using our tools, that we can absolutely create new neural pathways, new habits of being, if we so choose, and if we use the discipline to use our tools. We can change. Ernest Holmes' famous line, change your thinking, change your life. So there's an interesting article about the science of it, because this is not woo-woo stuff. This is science meeting spirituality. In this article called The Miracle of the Brain, they say there's a marvelous part of our brain which acts as a micro switchboard, filtering out that which our belief system has set as a not-for-me grid and letting through to our consciousness that which our belief system has allowed in as part of our lives. It's called reticular formation. And what it is a dense bundle of nerves that serves as a sensory filter for the brain, deciding which messages are significant enough to be sent to the conscious mind for attention. And to enhance clear thinking, creativity, and focused imaging, the brain needs an ample supply of oxygen-rich blood. The brain becomes deprived of oxygen-rich blood when muscles in the body are tensed as a result of stress. Oh, have you ever noticed when you're stressed out, you can't think straight? You get upset easily? You get pissed off? That's a very spiritual word, but that came out. So that's why we do deep breathing, that's why we do meditation, that's why we do mindfulness things, to allow that our brain to function as it's supposed to. So this reticular formation goes on to say, we pay our electric bill to receive electricity. We pay our water bill to receive water. We pay for groceries and receive groceries. Notice what you are paying attention to. Paying the coin of your energy. Paying attention to worry, fret, fear, and we receive more of the same. The reticular formation, which is also known as the law, is at work and gives us more of what we are seeing. Paying attention to the good, to the potential for miracles, to the richness of abundance available, we will receive more of that. That's the science of it. That's why we do what we do here. I love that. What coin are you paying today in your life? Something to really think about. Science supports with brain data the study that we do here of universal principles in the science of mind. It's right there. I didn't make it up. So habits that we have are typically automatic and unconscious. And that's probably why we just tend to do something habitually, even if we know better. Have you ever done something and you say to yourself, oh, I knew better than that? I will often say, what was I thinking? Yeah, what was I thinking? So when we can not have to think too hard about it, we don't have to do the diligent work of first becoming aware of the habit, which is the first step in changing, deciding to change it, and then actually choosing to think, feel, or be in a different way. We have to take responsibility. So habits in themselves are neither good or bad. The good news is that we can rewrite them. It just takes a willingness to notice what you're noticing, to be curious instead of blaming and shaming yourself. Because think about it. If you want to have healthy eating habits, you don't just stop eating. Right? No, you have to create a new habit of eating healthy food, creating that new neural pathway. And that's the neuroplasticity of our brain. Thank goodness we have that option right now to be able to consciously shift a behavior if you choose. It's trained thought. So keep in mind, though, this is something Reverend Michael Bernard Beckwith said. Your words, affirmations, power statements, and prayers do not do anything to God. Oh, they do something to your own awareness so that you may receive the blessings that are always being given. I really like that reminder. The tools we use in our tool belt, we're not trying to change God. We're trying to change our own consciousness and awareness to be even closer to that divine source that is ever available and always part of us. Yeah. So we have to apply what we learn here and use these methods as tools. So the Centers for Spiritual Living focus on specific methods because they directly aim at developing this regular, systematic training of our consciousness. And in the Science of Mind textbook, Ernest says, the highest mental practice is to listen to this inner voice and to declare its presence. The greater one's consciousness of this indwelling I am, the more fully you will live. This will never lead to illusion, but always lead to reality with a capital R. All great souls have known this and have constantly striven to let the mind of God express through their mentalities. The Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. This was the declaration of the great Master Jesus, and it should be ours also. Not a limited sense of life, but a limitless one. What if we knew our life was limitless? no limit, anything possible. So we bought the membership, so are we going to go to the gym? Yeah, I hope so. So the challenge or the opportunity, of course, is that we have to use our tools. We have to put our tool belt on every morning before we go out the door so that we design our day connected to that source and power and light within us. And our tools are useful only if we use them, right? Only if we use them. So are you willing to use your tools?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. You know, I said in my last talk last month, there's a power for good in the universe, and we can use it. So are you using it? It's just something to ask yourself. Yeah, because we have these tools. That's what they're there for. So in the Science of Mind magazine this month, Ernest says, the mind must be open to the higher realm of consciousness where the spiritual sun is forever shining. I love that image. Then, automatically, the mind will become illumined. It is the spiritual mind that governs the lower principles of life. When our minds are governed by the truth, with a capital T, everything we do will be governed by the truth. Our sense of this divinity develops. As this sense of this divinity develops, so will our expression of it increase. Our consciousness expands through meditation and mental attention and through conscious communion with the invisible, through our intuition, which is the voice of spirit in us. So you might want to get a pen and paper out if you're interested, and we're going to write down some things about what the tools are. So what is our number one tool in the Science of Mind philosophy, do you think? Our number one tool? Treatment, yes. Spiritual mind treatment. Whoops. Spiritual mind treatment. All right, I'm going to put my little thingy out here. That's our number one. And Ernest Holmes talks about, and if you're not familiar with spiritual mind treatment, it's a very unique affirmative, five-step affirmative prayer that Ernest Holmes created. And it's an amazing way to claim your good, be in gratitude for it, knowing it's already here, and giving it to the divine. So it's a powerful form of prayer that you can learn to do yourself, or you can have a professional practitioner work with you in spiritual mind treatment. But it's our number one tool. And Ernest says, in spiritual mind treatment, we declare our word, we decree that it is the law whereunto it is directed, we accept that it is now accomplished, and just as surely as day follows night, we will see results. And it shall gradually dawn on us through experience that grows out of practice, that there is an invisible silent power that responds to us. We will discover that it is the most real thing we can ever contact. So spiritual mind treatment has been called an art, an act, and a science. It is an act being the conscious activity of thought. It is an art in that there must be appreciation and realization. And it is a science in that it produces verifiable results through the application of spiritual law. And Ernest also said, if a spiritual treatment could be seen, and a spiritual treatment merely means unifying the mind with good, it would be seen as a pathway of light. I love that image. So when we do spiritual mind treatment for ourselves or for others, it's opening to the light, that's all. It's a beautiful idea. So that's our first one. The next one is meditation. That's another tool. And meditation doesn't have to be a long, labored process. Meditation opens us to our inner awareness. It transcends all theologies and allows us to directly experience that one infinite reality. I love what Deepak Chopra says. Meditation is not a way of making your mind quiet. It's a way of entering into the quiet that is already there. Yes, there is a part of our mind that is quiet. And there's walking meditations. There's so many. There's apps now for meditations, for goodness sakes. There's no excuse not to meditate. And it could be 5 minutes. Think about spending 5 minutes with the divine. Think about spending 5 minutes with your good and just opening your heart and breathing. You know, it doesn't have to be a long, belabored process, although those long meditations are pretty nice. So think about that for your tool belt. Mindfulness. I'm probably blocking this, aren't I? You probably can't see it anyway. Mindfulness. Being mindful is kind of a buzz right now, buzzword. But think about mindfulness as just paying attention to the present moment, like we did in the meditation with Thich Nhat Hanh. Being mindful of our breath. Being mindful of what we're eating and how we're eating food. Being mindful of how we drive our cars and react to other drivers. Being mindful and just noticing and witnessing behavior without judgment. So being mindful is being in a neutral place. Reverend Maggie talked last week about the phrase, I like knowing, because we can be mindful if we're starting to talk about how things are so awful and ain't it awful, we can switch that neural pathway. I like knowing that things do change. I like knowing that I can use my tools and come back to center. I feel really frustrated with this project. I like knowing that there are resources that I can look into to help me with this project. I like knowing that I don't have to figure it out this red hot minute. I like knowing that I'll figure it out. I've figured it out before. Can you see the difference? It just sort of lightens the load. So once we start to pay attention and be mindful of what we're thinking and speaking, our word, we can start to switch that and create something that's leaning us more in the direction of what we want. Visioning. And visioning is not visualization. Visioning is actually a process that was designed by Reverend Michael Beckwith. And it cultivates the field of consciousness and illuminates what wants to emerge into form. We get out of our own thinking and planning, and we drop into that divine center and ask certain questions to be receptive to what the divine wants us to express and experience. And I'm hoping to offer a visioning workshop for our center here in December, at the end of December, to vision for the new year. So that's, look for that. And then there's tools for experiencing direct revelation, intuition, receptivity. Ernest says, our mental attitudes are our most priceless possessions. Our mental attitudes are our most priceless possessions. The deep issues of our thought can make us or unmake us. And don't we know that? What was I thinking? So we can make a list of our struggles. Another good process is make a list of our struggles or frustrations on one side, and then right on the other side, what would be a divine quality that is the exact opposite of that? And then pay more attention to that. So we move from, again, the struggle and the frustration to the possibility of something better, to move from the confusion to the possibility of clarity. So we're moving always in that direction of the possibility and potential of who we truly are when we have that divine connection. That's using the tools. What we affirm, we become. We know that. So what are we affirming? Right? And then there's tools to develop self-awareness, silence being one of them. And we don't really think about silence a whole lot. But there's so much going on when we listen and check our phones and Facebook and emails and blah, 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 television. And there's a lot of sensory input. Has anybody noticed that? There's a lot of overload, sensory overload. And going into nature is one of my favorite things. And being silent, not having my phone with me, being quiet, appreciating the sound of the river, the sound of the birds, just being silent, turning off the radio, turning off the television, being quiet, and letting our mind just settle. Spiritual coaching is another tool for developing self-awareness, to work with a professional licensed practitioner or coach, to examine our life in light of the spiritual principles, become aware of hidden beliefs, and then creating a new life. I love being a practitioner, and I'm also a certified life coach, because I see how people can and do change into the greater good using specific tools and practices. So if you've never had a session or a prayer from a practitioner, I highly recommend it. Usually at church we do them after service, but we're not doing them right now. Maybe we'll get back to that soon. And in fact, I have a group coaching experience I'm going to be doing for 4 weeks in November for women. And so if you're interested, you can contact me through email, and I can send you some information about that. And then we have gratitude. Gratitude is a huge tool, which I know many of you use, to be grateful. To be grateful no matter what's showing up, right? That's a big tool, that there must be a gift here. What is the opportunity in this challenge? And then journaling is another one. And journaling is a great way to practice gratitude on a regular basis. With my coaching clients, I give them this idea of bookends. So in the morning, before they get up and start checking their phones and such, I invite them to open their arms and say, "What creative genius will I be today? How can I serve today? What joy is going to come into my life today?" So you open the day to something interesting rather than getting up, "Oh, God, I got to go to work. Oh, there's so much to do. I don't know." Forgetting and remembering. Oh, I started the dance already. First thing when you wake up, you want to start that dance of remembering what you're connected to. I'm connected to the divine, so my day has to show up great. And then in the evening, the bookend is a gratitude journal, just a little journal by your bed. I have one, and every night I write down 5 gratitudes. I know you've probably heard this before, but it really makes a difference, especially when you write. Because writing, not just saying it and thinking it, but writing uses all parts of our brain. So it's another way to sort of solidify the good. So at the end of the day, I write down 5 little gratitudes, and I bless them, and I thank my day, and I go to sleep. It's a great, great tool. And then just saying thank you, as I said, and bless you. You know, I have to say, I have some faith in humanity. I have some hope for humanity. Because there is an organic response that we all do when someone sneezes. Right? Everybody's nodding their head here. Think about it. When someone sneezes in a public place, our reaction immediately is to say, "Bless you." Bless you, right? You may not say it, but you might think it. It's that automatic response. So when someone sneezes in a public place, you don't say, "Who are you voting for? What religion are you? What sexual preference are you? How much money do you make?" No. We don't do that. Our organic response is, "Bless you." So let's imagine we all sneeze. Bless you. Bless you. Just look around the room. Bless you. Bless you. Bless you. Bless you. Look around your house. Bless you. Whoever's sitting next to you. If nobody is, bless yourself. Think about that. I have a little practice I do at a stoplight. Every car that passes me, that I'm going straight, they're turning. I just bless them. I just bless you. Bless you. Bless you. Bless you. Bless you. I just, as people pass me, it's just a practice I've done for a long time. It opens our heart. It's an organic response. So I love that one. And then some tools for developing compassion are forgiveness, Forgiveness is a huge one. And again, that's a great practice to learn from a practitioner or a coach, especially if you're harboring resentment about something that happened a long time ago. And if you're dragging it on, it's a heavy tool. It's not even a tool. It's just a heavy burden. So using your tool of forgiveness will open your heart and free you to be relieved of that. I like the reminder of let us pray, not as a last resort, but as a first response. So prayer is another form of developing compassion. And as we know in Science of Mind, we don't pray in the pleading sense, please God, help me. No, we pray from that place of knowing that our good is available, and that's how we learn how to speak in the affirmative here. So we pray as a first response. We don't wait until something horrible happens. And then sacred service is also a great way to practice compassion, actively serving others, and seeking to bring about the Centers for Spiritual Living global vision of a world that works for everyone. Don't we all want that? A world that works for everyone. Bless you. Bless you. And then when we want to intentionally manifest something, we have, of course, our number one thing is spiritual mind treatment. And then affirmations and visualizations. We want to speak our word. We want to feel it. We want to visualize it. We want to plant seeds of what we want to experience in the creative process of life. We want to put our spiritual coin in what we want, not what we don't want. We forget, we remember. We forget, we remember. We forget, oh, I got my tools, I forgot. Now I remember. Affirmations. Spiritual mind treatment. Prayer. Etc., etc. And then giving and receiving, practicing the law of circulation. That keeps us in the flow of the divine. And then, of course, sacred study is reading, taking classes, studying, having a discipline of your daily discipline. What is your daily discipline to stay connected to your source? What is your daily discipline? And what is your daily routine? And are you using the tools? So just to kind of check in with yourself. Because think about how many times a day, and maybe our generation doesn't do this, but how many times a day do you check your phone, check your emails, get on Facebook, get sucked into Facebook, whatever it is? How many times a day are you bombarded with stuff? And how many times a day do you check in to the I Am presence within you? How many times a day do you say, thank you, God, for my life? How many times a day do I stop and just breathe and be grateful for what I have? My life is blessed. My life is blessed. I'm remembering. I'm frustrated. My life is blessed. I really don't like what I watch on the news, and my life is blessed. There's the dance. So it was interesting this morning. I get Abraham Hicks's newsletter, and Reverend Maggie's talked about